What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Let's Talk Divots podcast. We are a podcast that covers women's professional golf from people who walk inside the ropes on the LPGA Tour. Go ahead and follow us at Let's Talk Divots on all social media platforms, and go ahead, hit the like and the share button, and we really, really appreciate that. Ronnie, what's going on, brother?
Oh, just hanging out. I'm excited to talk with Charlotte here. We got Charlotte Thomas coming on to us. I believe she's in Australia, if I'm not mistaken, which is probably tomorrow already. But everything is good here. Still hanging out in beautiful San Diego, California. Still got some bad rap about our country, but it's well-deserved. The crap that's going on in this country is just not even worthy of anything, but it's happening here. But we're all surviving. How you doing up there in BC?
Yeah, man, super stoked to get going. Charlotte, what do you think about, like, all of a sudden we're getting excited to get back on tour? It seems like it's pretty official here. What's happening with you?
I know. I got the email a couple of days ago. Well, first of all, sorry. Thank you for having me on. Very nice to talk to both of you guys. Yes, got an email a couple of days ago saying that we were going to restart. I've actually booked a couple of flights back to the US in the last couple of months, hoping that we were going to start, but we didn't end up going for it. So hopefully this time the flight I booked yesterday actually happens. And yeah, it's exciting.
I think it's going to happen. The men are playing and it seems to be going off without a hitch so far. Nobody's tested positive. Hopefully we're moving on to some sense of normalcy. And as Ron brought up, you know, doing a little research on you, I mean, you have one of the most confusing biographies out there. And we're going to get into like the Peloton and all that as well. But I laughed from Tiff Joe's story about introducing you on that today. And she's like, UK, Australia, Singapore, like choose a country, man. So we'd love to just for the listeners get a little bit of your background, your story, because I'm confused. I thought you were English and you clearly are English, but you have some serious ties elsewhere.
Yeah, don't worry. I'm pretty much as confused as you are most of the time. So yeah, my background, actually, I have no Australian blood, even though everybody thinks that I do because my family lives here and I spend the off seasons here. But my mom is actually from New Zealand. So I have some Antipodean roots, but they're not in Australia. So I'm half English, half Kiwi, but never lived in New Zealand. I grew up in England till I was 12 and then my whole family moved to Singapore for high school. So we all finished high school there and then I came to college in the States. But I took a gap year as well before I came to college and I lived in Australia for that year, most of that year. So I've been all over the place.
Where did you pick up playing golf at?
Started in England. I played in England for about 2 years before we moved to Singapore. And then I really got into the game and started properly when we were living in Singapore.
Who introduced you to it? Who introduced you?
Yeah, we all actually picked it up at the same time. We don't have a rich golf history in our family or anything like that. My mom's dad played, but I never met him. He passed away when my mom was quite young. So mom knew about golf, but never played. And then, so she started when she was 40 and we all just started with her. So we picked it up as a family. I have three brothers. So it was kind of a good family activity to go and all do together on the weekends. So,
and so June, so what's happening in June down there for Pride Month down in Australia?
Not a whole lot, to be honest. I mean, because of the, because of coronavirus and everything, obviously the house that we live in is also about an hour and a half from the city. And they kind of do Pride a little bit differently here. They do a lot of the parades sort of around Mardi Gras time in February and March. So I went to a parade in Sydney when we were down. I went and visited my brothers after my last LET event in March, and we went to a parade then. But nothing planned here this year, sadly, in June. But
Since we're on the topic now, Charlotte, I hope that you can hear me better. I've moved into the house and just wondering, like, being openly gay in sport, like, is it something that, I mean, it's 2020 now. It's like, seems ridiculous that we even have to have the conversation. But like, is it something that maybe just takes a generation, or you know, like as we progress through the years, it's something that nobody's even going to blink at, and we shouldn't have to you know, go through you know, having the, you know, the, like the issues that just came from the States a few days ago where they passed the laws of discrimination and stuff. Like, what's that like in sport, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I hope we get to the point where it doesn't have to be a conversation, but I've been really lucky. Like, I've never faced any really overt discrimination of any kind as a result of my sexuality, partly because I have a very supportive family and a very supportive network around me. And yeah, I mean, stuff like the bill that was just passed is incredible. And that's such, that was such great news for the LGBTQ community. And I just hope that it kind of shows people that, yeah, I don't, sorry, I'm not answering this very well.
Oh, good. I mean, I was honestly shocked when I read that, because I mean, Canada's a far more left wing than, let's say, an American. Well, I mean, America's kind of so 50-50 with everything, but like, I mean, that was just always growing up and being, you know, a manager and a head golf professional at a club and like dealing with HR and stuff. Like, I mean, that was just something that was always normal, you know? So when I actually read that news in America, I was like, I was quite shocked and taken back. I'm like, well, of course, like, why is that even a question? You know?
I know. Yeah. And it's sad to think that in some places in the States, like, I think all of the places that I've lived in the States as well have all been very liberal. Like, I went to college in Seattle, like, it was never an issue there. And then my parents lived in New York for a while, and so I was living there with them. So yeah, I've never experienced that, like, except when I was traveling. The only time that I really was not overly comfortable with talking about it or being open about it is when I'm traveling and in host housing sometimes on tour, especially more in like the conservative states where, like, usually I would never hesitate to, if I'm dating someone, to like talk about my girlfriend or whatever, stuff like that. But there are times in housing where I'm like, nah, okay. Or pro-am, stuff like that, where like, I just don't engage in those sorts of like topics, just because it's not really, I don't want to, you know, make people uncomfortable or anything like that. So I just kind of avoid it. I would love to get to the point where that's not the case and I never have to do that. But yeah, there's still some ways to go. I know I'm very, very lucky, but there's a lot of people who aren't as lucky as me. So we need to make it so that the world is a fair and equal place for everybody, not just the privileged ones like me. So.
Yeah, so I totally agree. And, you know, just to just one last question regarding this and just being female on that, because as like a male sportsman and growing up in sport, like, it seems to be a lot more prevalent in like, you know, female golf, female hockey, you know, hockey's big up here in Canada, to be like open about your sexuality, where I feel like, I don't know, do you think it's easier as a female as opposed to male, or how come the males aren't, you know, seem to be as open about it? Any thoughts there?
Yeah, I just think it comes down to like gender stereotypes and gender norms and like what's acceptable in your box, in your gender box, which is pretty sad. But it's like, for women in sports, like, you're perceived as being a little bit stronger. You're perceived as being a little bit more of a tomboy. You're perceived as being all those things that kind of associate with also maybe being gay. And therefore it becomes more acceptable. Whereas the gender norms surrounding sport and men and it being so heteronormative and it being so masculine, it makes any form of breaking away from that masculine mold a little bit more controversial. And I think, yeah, I mean, of course there are gay men athletes in every sport, but I think that it's a little bit harder for them to be open about it, which I hope that we can get to the point where that's not the case.
And I really believe, not just for, you know, this topic, but, you know, sport has the ability to transcend, you know, let's say sexuality, let's say race, just because, people aren't really measuring you by, you know, your skin color, your sexuality. It's like, what can you do on the golf course? What can you do on the court? What can you do in the rink, right? So I think mm-hmm. that it's really nice to hopefully bridge a gap. And, you know, with that segue, I just want to ask you, because I've been following you now, since we had that dinner at your host house housing in Australia, and you seem to use your platform a lot to address, you know, unjust things that have meaning to you. Examples, pledging for the bushfires back in Australia, the Peloton ride coming up, which we still need to touch on, Black Lives Matter, etc. So just as a professional golfer, somebody who's, you know, got some reach, and I know you're going to have a much bigger reach in the years to come with a nice successful career. Like, do you feel a social responsibility to be of service and to raise awareness on these things that you believe in?
Yeah, I mean, right now my platform is obviously, it's not big. It's small. Like, I don't have very many followers, but I still feel like as an athlete and as slightly more public figure maybe than your average person, like, it's important for me to tell the world what my values are. And that's what I always come back to with, like, the Black Lives Matter movement and what's been going on in America recently, is like, my friend put it really well, which is that it does come back to your values. And if you're seeing what's going on in the States and what you see doesn't support your values, then it is your responsibility to speak out about that. And for me, that was exactly what it was. It was sort of one of those things I saw and I was like, this is so, and I've known, like, I've been very aware of these movements for a long time, being in college in Seattle, studying communications. Like, I did a lot of classes on race, gender, sexuality, those sort of issues. But I kind of hadn't, and this is on me, like, I hadn't fully accepted my responsibility as a white person to use my voice to enact change. So, and I 100% feel like that is my responsibility at the moment, just with everything that's going on in the world. And it's important for white people to speak out, because you just have to show your support and try and encourage other white people to do the same as well, I think. And that's where the Pride Pledge came from, is like, a lot of people say a lot of things on social media, like, they talk a lot of good, you know, they talk the talk, but you need to walk the walk as well. And that's kind of what I was trying to encourage people to do with my pledges and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, back up what you're saying, and, you know, your core values, even though you say, like you said, you don't have a huge following, but when I see somebody like yourself talk, it's, you know, I listen, because you can just see it's you're serious and it's meaningful and it's from the heart. And that's the most powerful thing, is when it's sincere. Obviously, you come from good core values, and I had the privilege of meeting where you come from and got to see a little bit of that. And you know, your family's just lovely. And now I got to ask how your mother's bees are doing. Okay, so hit me with that.
Well, it's winter here, so they're kind of hibernating. We haven't really done anything with them. She got her hive like a few months ago, and yeah, the people who were kind of helping her out were getting started with it, told her to just let them be until summer, and then we can hopefully get some honey from them. But she loves them. She goes up and checks on them.
Sorry, Ron, just so you're not in the dark, Charlotte's mom was like, you know, pulled me, you know, grabbed me, you know, do you know about the situation of the world's honeybees? And I was like, actually, yes, you know, I'm quite curious in permaculture, and I've watched some documentaries. So she started a bit of a beehive, and another just cause for the world. Yep. So.
Yeah, bees are very important. Without bees, there's a lot of pollinating that doesn't go on. There's a lot of stuff that would die, and people don't even realize that.
Yep.
Hey, Charlotte, I used to teach golf actually in New Zealand and north of Melbourne in Whittlesea. Actually, I lived in Whittlesea, and I coached at Hidden Valley in Wallen. Do you know it at all?
I don't know it, but that's awesome. Where did you coach in New Zealand?
I worked at Manawatu Golf Club in Palmerston North for Tim Wilkinson's coach. Tim Wilkinson's been on the PGA Tour for, you know, more than a decade. And so I did a little bit of time over there working under Andre White, who's been a longtime mentor. And loved my time over there. Just a fantastic golf culture, great people. And went over to Torrey Pines and hooked up with Tim Wilkinson and Andre for the week, and, you know, had some dinners and walked inside the ropes a bit, and got to reconnect there. So it's a really, really cool part of the world.
Yeah, I love it.
But yeah, Hidden Valley, you don't necessarily need to, it was a Craig Perry Club or something, but pretty north, pretty run down. It served its purpose there. So what have you been working on these past 100 days? What's going on in your golf game? How is your game? And you feeling pretty sharp?
Yeah, so golf courses were closed here up until about 6 weeks ago. Before that, I had a net in the backyard, and I got a putting green, a little putting mat inside. So I was doing a lot of like skills work and stuff like that. And then when I was able to get back out on the course, I've just been playing, getting used to, you know, being back on the golf course, trying to shoot a number and stuff. So our driving range still isn't, it opened for the first time yesterday. It's open twice a week. So I'm able to go a little bit to hit balls now. But I've been loving just kind of getting back out on the golf course and like just enjoying playing again. You don't realize how much you miss it until you literally don't have the option to play. So that's been really fun. I'm feeling pretty good. I mean, we have 5-6 weeks until we start up again. So now is when I'm really going to start grinding. I wouldn't say I have been doing that recently. I've just kind of been trying to keep things ticking over and staying fit and stuff like that. So yeah, now that we really have a start date, I'm going to start putting a program together and getting ready to kick off again.
So your rookie year was 2019, is that correct?
Yeah, rookie year LPGA, yeah.
Well, you started off with a real bang there. It's good to see that you still have the passion for it. It's not just fun anymore. It's actually, you know, it's a job. It's your career, and you know, you have to be driven and get out there and practice and really get after it. And just wanted to say, you really start out the bang in your career, and then it kind of hit a little skids there for a little while. What happened?
So I finished second in my first event. Rookie debut was the
unreal.
Very cool.
That was the Vic Open, which it didn't feel like my debut event because I played that event three times before. Before it was an LPGA event, it used to be an LET event. And it's literally an hour and a half across the bay from where I live. We take a ferry there at the beginning of the week, and then we stay over there for a week. But so that course is one of my favorites in the world. 13th Beach, the beach course, is literally, I absolutely love it. And I just feel so comfortable at that event. My brother was on the bag. My whole family was there watching. And it was just like one of these surreal weeks honestly, finishing second, like, on Saturday was the crazy, crazy windy day. I think I shot 78 and was still like tied ninth or something. And then on Sunday I played decent, shot 3 under, got in the clubhouse, and my brother was like, hey, you're T2 and you're one shot back, you might get in a playoff. And I was like, what the hell? So I was going and chipping on the putting, getting ready for a playoff, and Celine just killed it coming in and holds some crazy putts. But it was a fun start for sure.
Yeah, I love that golf course. And even this year when the wind blew, I think Kelly and I were like 2 over par for the day, and we jumped like 30 spots or something. So when you finished second in your first event, even though you'd play, you know, like, but as a LPGA status, were you like, yeah, I'm going to run it. This is pretty easy. Like,
no, definitely not. But then, so we went to the Aussie Open, and then our first, which I played okay. And then our first event back in the States was Arizona, and I finished 6th in Arizona. And I was like, what is happening? I was like, this is crazy. So I kind of secured my card almost in the first 3 events of the year. And then rookie year caught up with me, and I got a bit flustered and realized what it really feels like to be a rookie. Those first three events were a little bit surreal.
And what do you mean by that? Like, realized what it meant to be a rookie and that rookie caught up with you. Can you elaborate a bit?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously I played so well the first three events. It kind of just was like floating on a cloud. You're kind of just, you're not really realizing everything that's going on around you. And I kept playing well for the next few events, like kept making cuts, and then I played my first major and I wasn't swinging it great. And I was just playing so many practice rounds and trying to get used to the courses, and the courses were getting tougher. Like the Vic Open, I'm super used to that golf course. I love it. And then Phoenix, the Founders, like, isn't that challenging of a golf course. Like, it's pretty short. The greens are pretty simple to read. So like, I just got the putter going and had a really great week. And then the courses got tough, the greens got tough, and I felt like I was searching every week in a way. And I think that my expectations obviously went up, and I think the pressure went up a little bit as well. Like, people were talking to me about rookie of the year literally after three events, and
unreal.
There's 20 events left in the season. I'm like, I can't even wrap my head around this right now. And so that sort of stuff was just kind of piling on me a little bit, and definitely my expectations went up a little bit. So I kind of had to check myself about halfway through the year, and I was like, okay, we need to just try and finish the season as strong as we can, try and get into Asia, which I didn't end up doing, which was disappointing because I definitely set myself up to be able to do that after the start. But yeah, so it was a really big year of learning a lot, and I was really excited about taking everything I learned into this year, but obviously haven't been able to do that yet. But
so moving into your, I don't know what they say in America, Ronnie, sophomore year, like what advice are you giving your second year self from your rookie self, and what's the, you know, mentality moving forward?
I think my biggest thing is being ready for Sunday, not being ready for Thursday. So I need to kind of pace myself a little bit more week in, week out, and make sure that I have the energy that I need for the weekend. I found last year I was on the cut line a lot, and by Friday night I was exhausted. And then if I'd made the cut, I'd have to go back and play 2 days. And my stats when I played the weekend, like I never really moved up the leaderboard very much on the weekend, which is what you've got to do. So obviously my energy was not being used in the right ways. And so I was really going to try and focus on kind of practicing a little bit less during the weeks, really just time management and trying to make my time at the course as efficient and effective as possible, just to kind of conserve energy and make sure that I'm ready for the tournament days when it matters.
Yeah. From working, I worked for a rookie all last year, and then, you know, working for a veteran now, the difference of, you know, how they're end up grinding, it's typically after a round is like, no, my energy is more important. We're going home for the day. Like, you know, you sometimes you're just beating your head against the wall if you're trying to searching and find something. You know, like, we're as athletes, we're in the mentality of like, we can outwork it, but golf just always isn't like that. Sometimes you need to, you know, have a break, maybe have a glass of wine, and you know, like, literally just go out, let loose, and enjoy yourself a little bit. So really, really great words. And what about your, and I got to give a giant shout out to Chris, because as a new guy on tour last year, he's probably, you know, one of my favorite guys. He's always got a smile on his face and super friendly and, you know, engaging to me as a new guy out there. So shout out to Chris. How is he for you on the bag and going into your second year? Seems like an awesome person to have you smiling out there constantly.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I got so lucky, especially as a rookie, to find a guy who stuck with me throughout my whole rookie year. That's really not very common, I don't think. In fact, unless you work for a rookie their entire year, I think I was the only rookie who had the same caddy all year. I'm not 100% sure on that, but
I started with Jenny in New Jersey for the rest of the remainder of the year there. So yeah, but not the whole year.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was really lucky to kind of find him super early, and we're both English. We have similar sense of humor. And we just get along really, really well. And he's obviously an incredible caddy, and we just work really well together. So I definitely got lucky finding him, and I'm very excited to see him again and start working with him again. It's been so long. He's in the UK writing this out as well. So
speaking of being English, what do you think of Kate and Justin Rose stepping up for the Rose series over there? Are you planning to participate at all?
Amazing. That's so cool. So I don't think I'll be able to play in any just because of the way the schedule is looking, but I think the first event was yesterday, and one of my best friends on tour, Gemma Driver, played in it and said it was a really cool event. She said they set it up pretty tough for them. There were some really long holes out there, so they weren't easing their way into it by any means, but it's amazing what he's done. And just seeing them, anybody on the men's side stepping up for the women's game like that is really, really special. And I wish it happened more in golf, but maybe this will be the start of something, because I do think it's really important in order to sort of get on the same level of equality as the men. Like, you look at the WNBA and the NBA, and how much the NBA is in support of the WNBA is really amazing. And I think it would really help the women's game if the PGA Tour players stepped up a little bit and sort of gave us shout outs and promoted our tour a little bit. I think they have more power than they realize in that respect.
100%. I'm calling them out right now. Seriously, you're absolutely right. And I heard there could be a co-sanctioned event with the LPGA and the PGA next year, which would just like go so far and be so cool. And also, just if we get on TV early here in July, being one of the first sports to go back, like, getting all those viewers into the television sets, that maybe fans create new fans of people that might not normally be watching, just really huge opportunity there.
Yeah. And this is another reason why the Vic Open is one of my favorite events. Like, that's co-sanctioned with the men's European Tour and the men's PGA Tour of Australia. And we play it and we do staggered tea time. So it's a men, then a women's tea time, men's, and then a women's tea time. And all I hear all week is like, wow, it's so good to see the women playing. Wow, the women are so impressive. All this stuff. And it's like, yeah, we've been here this whole time. You just haven't been paying attention. So just giving us that platform. And the way we play golf is so different to the men. Like, it, but that doesn't make it any less exciting. And it's, I think the 350-yard drives is such a small, small part of golf. And for me, it's like the artistry that comes with being able to get up and down from everywhere, which women do just as well as men. So I just, being able to have the platform to showcase that is something that I hope, we have a great platform, but it still needs to improve for sure.
I thought it was really cool playing practice rounds with the men over in Australia. For one, it just, you know, the whole male-female dynamic is always just a little bit different. I felt it really loosened things up. Everybody was just a little bit curious about everybody. The guys playing with the women. And, it was just a great experience. Hopefully there's something more to that. And like you said, they can use their platforms to some degree. I've got a question about, I was actually just watching the golf. And, you know, speaking about exposure or, you know, potential to maybe bring the game into people's TVs a little bit differently, but they're miking up a few of the people with fans. Now, I know Ron's going to have a different opinion on this than me, but what is your opinion on that? Is it something that you'd be down for, open to, or just what do you think about that? Did you see all?
Like they did with Ricky, right?
I didn't see Ricky last week, but I just watched, you know, the back nine of Adam Hadwin mic'd up, and he had the little unit on his back, and he was mic'd up the entire round. Like, you could literally hear, like, so he was showcased every single shot, and you could hear every single thing that he said, and he wasn't necessarily playing well. So that's where I come in as like an ex-player, and I'm just like, man, I don't know, that's like a lot of pressure. And that on 18, he's like, do you think you guys could turn this off? You could see he just wanted the cuss bomb, you know, but it seems a bit invasive to me.
I feel like it would be tough. I feel like it would be good if there were multiple people mic'd up at the same time, so you could kind of bounce around and you weren't fully relying on one player the whole time. I feel like Ricky was the only one that was mic'd up in round one or something, and he wasn't having a great day. And I was like, maybe if they mixed it up so you could kind of bounce between players. I also think, like, I do think from a viewer's perspective, it's really interesting to see caddy player relationships and caddy, what they're talking about. I find that really interesting when I'm just watching golf. And so I think the fans could really get quite a lot from that. I think it would make me quite nervous. I think I would, it would be like an added little piece of pressure, something extra to think about. So I would have to be pretty comfortable out on tour before I agreed to do it, if that makes sense. Like, maybe I wouldn't do it straight away, but eventually I'd be open to it.
Well, when you get in some of the final groups, I always have that boom mic walking with you for the Golf Channel. So you are on air, and I've got to work the boom a few times, and I've gotten close to a few caddies, friends of mine, and said, if you're in it, where I'm getting real close to you, because as a fan, I love to hear their interaction with the caddy, the wind, what they're talking about. Sometimes they're not even talking golf, but I agree. Yeah. They need to have a little bit more people out there with mics on it so they can bounce around. And there is a 7-second delay, so if someone does drop an F-bomb or something, they will catch it before it goes out. But I find it extremely important for the fans, especially now that there's no fans out there, to hear what's going on and how they're, you know, dialing in their shots. And I love it. And it's probably a little bit of a hassle having the mic pack on the back and everything like that. You see Tom Brady, when he swung, it popped off. So it
does, I saw that.
You just got to play your game and don't worry about it. It's just another fan out there, even though it's going to 10 million people. Don't sweat it. Swing it.
Didn't Tom Brady hold that shot when it popped off, though? So it's all right.
That's right for Eagle.
Yeah, I'm with you, Ron. Like, as a fan watching, it is cool, and totally an element. And as a, a PGA member who's been trying to grow the game his whole life, like, you know, it's just another outlet to get into people and, like, help continue to grow the game. But, like, it seems like it might be a little bit tough to be yourself as well. Out there and just like really find the flow. Just again, I'm coming from a fan and then as somebody who played the game professionally as well, just like seems like it might be just tough to really be organic with it all, you know what I mean? Go ahead, Ronnie.
Well I kind of disagree, because you guys are on film all the time. If you're in the final group or one of the featured pairings, you know you're on camera, you probably have a microphone going. I did mention the T-Mac last year. I said, if you and Carlotta are in the running coming down and I'm on a mic, I'm getting close to you. And he says, oh, no, you're not. So I do respect the fact that you guys don't want that microphone in your face, but I've gotten pretty close. I got close to Nina Mattsson one time. I actually saw her take a bite of the lemon, just because that's her go-to. When she hits a bad shot, she takes that lemon out of her bag and bites the lemon. I was right there for that, but I did give her space and I pulled back and I didn't go into it. But yeah, a lot of people, you know, it is what it is. You guys are on TV. You don't even know you're on TV. You're still on TV.
So she
I feel
bites.
Like there's a difference. Sorry, go ahead, Charlotte. I feel like there's a difference between the occasional, you know, if you're in the last group, you know you're on TV having a microphone there versus knowing you have a mic pack on you at all times. You know what I mean? I think there's a bit of a difference. Yeah.
100% anyway, Casey, right. You know, anytime you say something, it's going to be picked up. So you're right. When you're mic'd up, you know whatever you say, and it is in the back of your mind. When you don't have it on, 50-50 if they even have the TV cameras rolling when you're hitting a shot. So you're 100% right.
Yeah, no, well, I think the problem from what I heard on the men's tour is they're having a problem having people commit. So I think there would be a few of the women, you know, Christina Kim would be down for sure. Some might be tough to get them to commit to that. Let's switch gears here a little bit. And speaking of a couple of stats, and you were talking about the distance in the men game. When's the last time you missed a fairway?
You're going to have to tell me that. When's the last time I missed a fairway, Casey?
The 12th of never. What are you, 82% finding the short grass?
Yeah, that's definitely my forte. I just wish I could hit more greens.
Yeah, and so like as a shorter hitter, but super accurate, obviously those two come in hand in hand, and like a pretty solid putter. And now looking at like a DeChambeau come out of here. I don't know how much you've been following the men's game, but like, what the hell is going on there? Like, do you try to add speed at all in the off season, or, you know, is that something that you work on with your coach?
Yeah, I definitely do. I think I'm never going to be a bomber. But I just try to gain a couple of yards here or there. I know every little helps. I've probably gained 10 in the last couple of years, which has definitely helped. But a big thing for me this off season has been club changes. I got new irons that have a much better playability. Like, I wasn't playing with the right sort of stuff last year.
What are you using now?
I was using Ping G400s, which are a little bit more of an amateur golf club. And so this year I've changed to the I200s with KBS shafts. And the KBS shafts are something that a lot of the girls are using at the moment. They're like, they're more lightweight graphite. Well, the one that I'm using is like a 70-80 gram graphite. And the performance of them is just like above and beyond what I was using last year in terms of spin rates and being able to stop it on the green. Me and Chris would really struggle with any front pins. If I was hitting more than a 9-9 in, like, I just couldn't get the ball to stop. So that really impacted my greens and reg. And then I was kind of scrambling the whole time. And so I hope that the first two events were really good, like hitting it a lot better, didn't have great results, but I'm excited to see the difference in performance from these clubs versus last year.
Yeah, I'm familiar. I mean, KBS shaft, again, I used to fit clubs for a living. They really get the ball moving up in the air really quickly. So that should be helpful. And then, as being a shorter hitter, you definitely have to play pretty smart out there with your spin rates and stuff, and just picking the flags that you can attack. I worked for Louise Ritterstrom 1 week. We were in the second last group on Sunday there, but, it was just a bit of an adjustment to one of my first few weeks caddying. It was like, okay, yeah, we can't aim at that flag, right? Like, you just gotta, you gotta take it out to the right, hit a really darn good shot, a precise shot in there, and pick your battles. So
really, yeah, exactly.
Well, what about this Peloton race? Let's pump that up a little bit. We briefly touched on it before my internet connection failed after I specifically asked you to make sure you have a good internet connection. So, Race for Unity on this Saturday coming up, go into detail, please. And any links and stuff.
Yeah. So it came about, we have a Peloton group on Instagram with all of the LPGA players and kind of LPGA fringe, you know, staff and stuff like that who have Pelotons. And we all kind of try and schedule rides together and stuff like that. And we kind of came up with this idea of trying to do a ride to raise some money for, you know, the issues going on in the States at the moment. So it kind of just came off a whim, and then Morgan Pressel just ran with it, and she was amazing. Her and Tiff Joe and I think Henny Zuhl were the three kind of girls who really got behind it and put a lot of energy into organizing it. So yeah, so this Saturday, I'm going to have to get the information up so I don't get it wrong, because it's the time difference is a little tricky here. But yeah, so Saturday, June 20th, we're 10 a.m. Eastern time, 7 a.m. Pacific time. We're going to do a 30-minute ride with Alex Toussaint, who's one of the trainers, and he's awesome. So yeah, the idea is to kind of get people to pledge based off of, you know, either just a one-time donation, or if you want to do it based off of the number of miles that we ride in that 30-minute span, then that's another option. And yeah, so there's two teams. There's one team that's raising money for girls golf, and that's the team that we're on. Most of the LPGA girls are on. They're raising money for a scholarship that's going to be in the name of Renee Powell, which is going to specifically support women, girls of color, and black girls trying to get into golf. So that's the idea behind it. It should be really cool. And yeah.
What time in the morning will you be riding?
Yeah, so it's 1 a.m. for me, so I'm going to do it the next morning. I'm going to do it a delayed time, so yeah, I won't be doing it live, sadly, but I think you can stay up.
You can stay up and get out there and ride. I know. Come on, you're a favorite to win this thing. All the training you've been doing, you're a little firehouse. You got this.
Yeah, maybe I'll just have a late night on Saturday, stay awake with a few gin and tonics, and then get on the bike. Maybe we'll see.
Pump it out.
Great cause. Tiff Joe, we've had on the show, and on an awesome ambassador for girls golf. And we will link all that in the show notes for anybody who wants to. We're not going to have this out in time, but so I guess that is what it is there. But really, really cool.
Yeah.
And anybody can track it down afterwards. So,
Yeah, for sure.
We're cognizant of your time here. I've got a few more questions, and we're really stoked to have you on the show, Charlotte. But so given the current COVID climate, it's really shooken everything up, especially what people's normal point of view on what life was. How has your perspective changed, if it has, on like a personal level, and like what's, important in, let's say, your life?
Yeah, it has definitely there's been a lot of time for reflection, for sure. I personally have really enjoyed being able to just spend so much time with my family, which, as a golfer, especially as an international golfer, you really don't get the opportunity to do very often. So I've really been trying to make the most of that. I've really also kind of, the way I perceive golf has changed quite a bit, just because it was kind of taken away for 3 months and I wasn't able to play. It really got the joy back in it for me. Not that I never stopped loving it or anything, but like, I really just was so, so excited to get back out there and get back on the course playing and stuff. Which when it's your career and you're excited for a week off here or there, it's like, it's amazing to just get 3 months where you really have to decompress. And then that excitement to get back out there was something that I wasn't really expecting. And it kind of showed me like how much I still love it. And just made me excited.
On all the social situations going on in the world right now, just to get a little bit more back into a little bit profound and, backtrack a little bit. Do you think for the first time in like, especially our generation, Ronnie might not be able to relate as much, but for people to actually have that time to like sit back, evaluate, not have their device in front of them, not be so busy, believing that they need to be here, be there. Do you think this break is, first of all, like enabled us to, go first things like the Black Lives Matter movement, and just like really, reevaluate who we are and what's actually important?
Yeah, I hope so. I think it's definitely put a lot of things in perspective for a lot of people. It's also highlighted inequalities that people kind of have, kind of swept under the rug a little bit. Just basic, the way that the Black community is being affected by COVID-19 versus every other community, the way that men's golf is able to start 2 months before we're able to start simply because of financials, little things like that, where I think people have just become more aware that there are these issues in the world that need to be addressed. There's been a quote going around on social media that's like, maybe 2020 is actually the year we need. Like, everybody's talking about how horrible 2020 is and how 2020 needs to end, but maybe it's the year where we're all finally going to wake up and realize that we need to be better. And so that's kind of the way that I'm trying to look at it from a slightly more positive spin, and trying to make the most out of it and do what I can to.
I genuinely believe the obstacle is the way. A great book by Ryan Holiday, I believe. And if you haven't read it, definitely give it a gander. I can recommend all sorts of self-empowerment books if you need them. The coach coming out in me. So,
You should listen to his podcast as well. Have you listened to the podcast on Don't Tell Me the Score? It's a BBC podcast, and Ryan Holiday goes on it. He does a really good one. that's, yeah, it's fascinating. I think you would enjoy it if you liked his book. So that's where I heard about his book.
I've listened to several, not the BBC one, but, you know, Tim Ferriss show, Aubrey Marcus, yeah. Places like that, where I get my content. I've got one last question. I'm going to pass it off to Ronnie, see if he's got anything there. I ask this to all the athletes. And just because, again, we've got you know, some overachievers always sitting in front of us and just trying to dissect your brains. And the question is, you have a belief, a behavior, or a habit that has changed your life since the last few years of being on tour and professional golf?
A belief, a behavior, or a habit?
Or a habit. And to just give you a little bit of an example, I know it can be a tough question to be put on the spot with. You know, Gabby Lopez came out with meditation. You know, if my it could be something you purchased. I've taken up mountain biking in the last few years personally, and that's absolutely changed the way that I, you know, view exercise and my well-being.
Yeah. So I would say, yeah, same as Gabby, meditation has completely changed my life. I started about 3 years ago. No, longer than that, 5 years ago. And it, from a golf perspective, that has totally changed my life. But the big thing that I love doing is hiking in Arizona, where I've recently moved. I do a lot of hiking. I love getting outdoors. And then we have some amazing beach walks down here in Australia as well. So that's been a big part of my like mental health and just getting outdoors and away from the golf course as well. And yeah, so I'd say that would be mine.
Meditation keeps coming up, Ronnie. I swear, man, it's if you're not doing it, if you can't find 10 minutes of your day to meditate, then you have a problem, right? I read that quote.
I meditate every day around 4:20.
I love it, brother. I love it. Ronnie, do you have any other questions for Charlotte, brother?
You know, it's a real pleasure meeting you and everything. I'm going to be a fan for sure. But you mentioned Arizona, you live in Arizona. You're a member at Superstition Mountain. Is that correct?
That is correct, yeah.
Do you get to play with when you play there? Do you swing with any other pros?
Yeah, I do. We have an amazing group of girls out there now. I train. I do training with Carlotta, Dana, and Mina, like with our trainer out at Superstition Mountain. And then we all play together a bunch. It's been really amazing to get to kind of pick Carlotta's brains and play with her and watch her practice and stuff like that. It has been seriously amazing. The first time I played 9 holes with her, we were playing a little match and we were both playing all right. And we came down to the 9th hole and we were all square and I stuck it to like 2 foot and I was like, yes, I'm going to get her. And she left it short and she was like, don't worry, James. James is her boyfriend. Don't worry, James, I don't need my putter. And she chipped it in for birdie and we finished all square. I was like, oh yeah, okay, I'm playing with Carlotta. I forgot.
Great story. Yeah, she's a fun girl to watch. So, she can hit it a mile.
She is incredible. It's very inspiring. We had a day like a golf day for all of us. We all played. There were 8 of us and we all played, and all the members came and watched, and I was playing in Carlotta's group and she shot 9 under and swept the floor of the rest of us, and it was
you
just
had like a little mini LPGA tournament going on, like what I remember recall seeing something. What happened there? What was that?
Yeah, so the members, the director of golf there, Matt Brooks, he kind of just decided to put together a little event for us, the 8 of us, just because he knew we weren't playing and stuff. So there was a little bit of money on the line and all 8 of us played 2 foursomes and all of the members came and watched. And yeah, I mean, Carlotta shot 9 under.
That was that. Okay.
She took the money.
When you put quite the money on the line, did you guys all put up the purse, say $100 a head or something, or did the course put it up, or how'd that work out?
Yeah, it was actually from the members. The members in the course put up a little bit, and then I think one of the members ended up matching what the course offered. So it ended up being a couple of grand kind of thing that we were playing for. So it was really, really
gotta
cool.
Love
They're
those,
so supportive.
Gotta love those members and the camaraderie out there sounds awesome. Speaking of camaraderie, I know that's one of the things I'm missing about being back on tour, and we're going to get there real soon. It sounds like there's a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, end of July for any listeners there in Ohio. Charlotte, thank you so much for joining us on the Let's Talk Divots podcast. Where can people find you? What are your handles, or is there anything else you'd like to promote with the end of this?
Well, thank you guys for having me on. It's been really fun talking to you. I'm on Instagram, CharlotteThomas8, and Twitter, it's C_Thomas54. Other than that, yeah, that's it. Just Instagram and Twitter.
Love it. It'll be all in the show notes. And once again, we will see you in Ohio. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Let's Talk Divots podcast. We are at Let's Talk Divots on all social media platforms. Go ahead, like us, share us, comment on any of our posts, and we will definitely communicate. We want some interactions, and let us know how we're doing. We appreciate you. We appreciate you listening, and we'll see you next week for another great show.